Okay, guys, and welcome back to the Ring Ratings Reflections and Rants with me, Tris Dixon, joined as always, or more often than not anyway, by Dougie Fisher and Tom Gray. Guys, it's good to see you both. Hey, we were all talking about Derek Chisora last week and saying, what's he got left? And does it kind of matter what he's got left because he's got now a high mileage? Dougie, what were your thoughts seeing him beat Kubrat Pulev in another bruising and exciting fight?
Well, it was what I expected in terms of his grit, and his heart and his determination to get through a tough 12 rounder, which it turned into a battle of attrition, which is a Derek Chisora fight. I think he thrives in that sort of fight environment, which is added a lot of mileage to his boxer's odometer. It's put a lot of wear and tear on his body and bones, but he's at home. It's in his muscle memory. I mean, he could be half knocked out and he can dig down and he can fight like he did down the stretch of that fight. The fight didn't go the way I expected, because I thought Pulev would beat him. I thought Pulev, would be in for a tough fight, but I figured Pulev would win a clear decision, like 116, 112 type of decision. But Chisora got the nod in a close fight. I don't care how the fight was scored. I didn't bother scoring it. It was that type of fight. It was the type of fight where it's like, whoever wins, who cares? These guys are what they are. I've considered Derek Chisora to be the heavyweight gatekeeper for like the last 5 years, And if you can't beat him, then you're not a contender. And if you just, even if you just squeak by him, you're not really a contender in my view. Pulev lost that fight on the official scorecards. And I do not consider him a top 10 or even top 15 heavyweight. I consider Pulev now to be a gatekeeper. But what kind of scares me is when people say, oh, well, Chisora won the fight. How about Deontay Wilder next? I mean, I don't know about you guys. You guys can share. I don't want to see that. That's
Yeah,
scary.
yeah, Tom. I mean, the names that I've heard in the aftermath, the Deontay Wilder and Dillian White for a trilogy fight. I mean, let's first of all get your take on those two. And if you're going to sort of put the kibosh on those two, where do you go with it?
Okay, firstly, in relation to the Deontay Wilder fight, I mean, the narrative so far is to be for everyone to turn around and run for the hills, and I totally get it. However, one thing I'll point out here is the fight on Saturday against Pulev, that's a 12-round affair where both guys have literally taken hundreds of punches over a 36-minute period of combat. If Deontay Wilder finishes off Derek Chisora, how's he going to do it? One dig, one big right hand, lights out. Now, don't get me wrong, a knockout could be damaging, but Deontay Wilder doesn't get into those types of fights. It's like 5, 6 rounds can go by where hardly anything's landing. There's a lot of posing, then bang, all of a sudden. The irony in it is that Derek Chisora is probably getting more damaged after what you've seen on Saturday night than he would getting completely sparked out by Wilder. And I think a lot of people are forgetting that. In terms of the Dillian White rematch or the trilogy fight, I think that Dillian White, when he comes back to boxing, is still going to have serious ambition. So what is the motivation behind going back in there against a guy he's already beaten twice and in the second fight knocked out? I think you might need to convince Dillian it's a good idea. It would certainly be a good slugfest. The first two fights were good. The first one was spectacular. I was ringside for it. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see where Derek Chisora goes from here. But I'm not 100% surprised that he's calling out Wilder. I mean, if they could get that fight in the UK, and let's face it, he's with the PBC, and although Eddie can turn around and say that he works with the PBC, it's scarce when they come together, and also more scarce if there's something to lose. If PBC envision any circumstance whatsoever where Chisora could win that fight, they're going to run a mile, and Eddie's going to make a fool of them to run a mile. So yeah, we'll see what transpires.
So where would you go then with Chisora? Tom, first you, seeing as you're on a roll, and then Dougie, you have a couple of seconds to give this one some thought.
To be quite honest, I'd retire. I wouldn't go anywhere. I would retire. I think he's been a remarkable servant to the sport in the UK and beyond. There's I've spoken to American fans that think a lot of Derek Chisora and appreciate what he's given the sport. So no, I would call it a day on a high note, because you just get the feeling the longer you wait around, the bigger the chance that something silly is going to happen. I mean, I can rhyme off a couple of heavyweights that he's not been in with, you know, let's put him in with Lewis or Tace, or let's do this or let's do that. But to be honest, unless he takes a significant step up, which would be Wilder. And by the way, we don't know what kind of state Deontay Wilder, I mean, I'm going to get in trouble here, but Deontay Wilder with a bit of ring rust is hilarious to watch. So the bottom line is, unless he's taking a significant jump up, it's just going to be more of the same. I would retire Derek Chisora on a high note.
Dougie, I mean, people obviously talk about the Deontay Wilder fight being almost like a cruel matchmaking, although Tom's obviously made a point for that. How do you see, I mean, the one that's been talked about and percolated over the last couple of years is Chisora against Joe Joyce.
That's interesting. I mean, the thing is you know, Tom made some good points about, you know, Deontay Wilder, right? Like, you know, there'll be rounds of nothing happening, and then he lowers the boom, and then it's over. I think we saw that with the rematch between Wilder and Luis Ortiz. But the difference is Luis Ortiz is a technical boxer, and he's creeping. He's a stalker. He's carefully stalking his opposition behind textbook technique from a southpaw stance. Chisora he's a pressure fighter at his best. He's going to bring the fight. And generally speaking, a pressure fighter versus a puncher gets knocked out unless that pressure fighter has an all-time great chin, you know, if they're fighting a great puncher, which is what Deontay Wilder is. In that mythical matchup, you know, Chisora versus Wilder, I think it ends sooner rather than later,
yeah,
and probably in spectacular fashion. And you know, you just don't want to see a guy who has as much wear and tear on his body and brain as Chisora take that type of one hitter quitter explosive knockout punch. Chisora against Joe Joyce, it's different because Joe Joyce isn't dying. Joe Joyce is a good athlete. We've seen this big guy do like backflips, right? You know what I mean? It's like, okay.
Capoeira moves.
Yeah, right. But he's not dynamic. He's not explosive like Deontay Wilder. He's kind of a big grinder himself, you know, solid technique. What makes him special is his physical strength, is his durability and determination. So you match two determined fighters together like that. Yeah, I mean, that's a huge fight in England, in Britain. It's a good matchup. It's a good style matchup on paper. And if I was advising Chisora, you know, apart from saying, hey, hang up the gloves, I would say, yeah, if that fight was available, I would say take it. I think that's an excellent option for him, as is the rubber match with Dillian White, because I think coming off that win over Pulev, Chisora, at least psychologically, mentally, he's going to be up. Dillian White is coming off a knockout loss. They have history. Like I said, it's a huge event in England and in all of Britain. And if Chisora wins that fight, it's the perfect note to retire on. It's the perfect swan song. And, you know, both guys obviously will be well compensated.
Chris, I think that Joe Joyce is a horrendous style confrontation for him. I think I think Joyce would make serious strawberry jam of Chisora over a long period of time and drag it out. And it would be really, really hard to watch that, I think.
How about, I mean, politics aside, what about Daniel Dubois then, Tom?
It's just one of them where you can almost, as soon as you're mentioning those matchups, you can actually foresee what's going to happen. I mean, you know, Dubois essentially, in the only loss he's had, get completely outfoxed, you know, by Joyce. He's not going to get outfoxed by Chisora. You put Chisora in there, you know, winging hooks at Daniel Dubois, he's going to get cleaned out probably as quick as he would by Wilder. I mean, I just think that's we need to be very careful with him. I think one of the biggest liabilities here is that Chisora's won a fight, and he's won a main event at the O2. So you know, if he goes to Eddie and wants a big fight, he's liable to get it. So I'm a bit fearful about what could come his way. But no, Daniel Dubois sends a bit of a shudder through my spine, I'm afraid.
Do you know what this reminds me of a little bit when we're talking about this situation? It reminds me a little bit when we got to the end of Mickey Ward's career. You remember that? And, you know, and particularly after he'd come off that win over Gatti, and it was like, you know, people were talking about, oh, you got the Kostya-Zou fight possibly. And they were talking about, you know, other options that were out there for him. And obviously they knew what was going to come with the Gatti trilogy, you know, with the second fight and the third fight. They knew it was going to be violence, but there was sort of an end game in the sense, I think everyone knew that that rivalry was going to be, you know, get Mickey rich and get him out. That was the plan. But the worrying thing for Chisora is, I think Eddie said afterwards, you know, let's roll the dice again and see what we get.
I mean, I would hope that see Derek Chisora is a bona fide warrior. That's what he is, right down to his core. I mean, we've seen that guy take shit. I mean, even on Saturday, there was times where, you know, he was caught cleanly with an uppercut at one point. Like Doug said, he can fight semi-conscious. That's how comfortable he is under fire. So, you know, the amount of damage that's accrued over the career that he's had, and I give him full credit for Saturday night. He was brilliant in there, but you just want a guy like that to come out of this game with his marbles intact and be able to move on. I hope they're careful with the choice of opposition. I don't want to see Dubois. I don't want to see Joyce. In a funny way, guys, I'd probably rather see Wilder because I don't think Wilder will get a sniff until he lays him out clean. He probably takes one punch. Now, some people might turn around and get Apollo Creed flashbacks, and I get it. I totally get it. But it's this sustained butchering punishment over round after round after round after round. I know I'd rather get switched off if I was built. You know, I'm not built to take a punch. Deontay Wilder knocks my head into another postcode. But Chisora out one punch and doesn't keep taking tremendous butchery over a good few rounds. It probably makes sense in a funny way. I'm not picking Chisora to beat Deontay Wilder. Hell no. But, you know, I just want them to be careful.
The problem is obviously with the way Chisora fights, it invites butchery, doesn't it? You know,
Well,
one
if.
way, in your face, grind you down, and
Oh, well, you
this
know,
is what I've got.
you brought up Mickey Ward. It reminds me of Arturo Gatti and the matchmaking process with Gotti. Like, what do we do with this guy? They had to kind of bring him back carefully after his two fights and losses to Ivan Robinson. That was 1998. And they
But you,
did. They
but
brought him
but
back. Yeah, go ahead.
but I know that Chisora was back with Don Charles in the corner for this, and I didn't see much made of that. But which I found interesting. But obviously, what they tried to do with Gatti was they moved him to Buddy McGirt, and they tried to make him more of a boxer. And obviously, he had that win over Leonard Darine, and I think was it the Terra Millet fight?
Somewhere around there.
That was
And
one of his comeback fights, and he knocked out Tehran in 4 rounds.
and we were starting to think, oh, we've got a different Gatti here, but Chisora is just not doing that. You know, the
No,
way
I
you
listen,
know he's
I listen, I credit Buddy McGirt for improving Arturo's jab and his technique to an extent, but I give more credit to matchmaker Carl Moretti, who was with Main Events at the time, for Arturo Gatti's comeback. But it was the same talk. They were like, okay, let's cash out against Oscar De La Hoya in 2001. You know, and what happened happened, right? Let's you know, after the Ward trilogy, okay, he won the trilogy. He could have said bye, guys, but it's like, well, let's cash out against you
Floyd.
know, Floyd Mayweather, right? And what happened happened, and you keep fighting until, you know, Alfonso Gomez is chopping you up, and Carlos Baldemir is stopping you. You know what I mean? And you're taking punishment in those fights, against guys that weren't in your class 5 years ago.
And that, as Tom says, is the kicker, right? He's just beating Kubrat Pulev, who, you know, is in essence a gatekeeper to the top half of the heavyweight division.
Yeah, this is the thing about it. And listen, a lot's been made of. I would pick Wilder by quick sharp knockout over Chisora, and a lot's been, you know, oh, you know, if he hits Derek's in trouble. What happens if Chisora lands on Wilder? You know, he's going to be at the back of his head. Derek
Something.
Chisora will be convinced that he can put a hole in him.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he does, so don't at me. But
You're
the
getting
bottom.
added.
The bottom line, the bottom line is, you know, I think that in order for any kind of significance to remain in Del Boy's career, it would need to be a step up after the case that we've just built. But a couple of them, I'm not being funny. I think that Joyce and Dubois, I would probably rather see Wilder. I think he gets absolutely hammered by the other guys for a long, long period of time, and that's Trish, you know better than anyone the damage that mounts over all those rounds. I mean, Saturday night, Del Boy still won't be feeling right. You know, he took shed loads of punishment in a fight that he won. Both guys get messed up there. So, you know, we'll see what happens in the future.
Well, I hate to be that guy, but I am going to be that guy because, you know, we've talked about quite a few serious things on this podcast since we've been up and running. And obviously one of the things that we haven't really sort of labored on is the point of CTE. And when we talk about Mickey Ward, obviously Mickey is a guy who now has regular appointments with his neurologist, who is struggling with short-term memory issues, who is concerned about the future and his wife and daughter having to look after him and that kind of stuff, because of the damage he's acquired from boxing. And, you know, we talked about it there. Mickey actually, you know, Mickey, his team, who was Sal Luana, the cut man, and Lou DiBella, and the guys that were around at the time, had a end game in mind. It was get him out, get a certain amount of money in the bank and retire.
Yeah.
That's the worrying thing for Chisora, is like, this could go on for years, really, fighting a couple of times a year of up, down, and, you know, giving great fights and matching him evenly. Because ultimately, that's the thing as well. That's part of what we're talking about, is do you match him evenly or do you match him ambitiously? Like, what are you trying to achieve with what's left? It's a really hard situation, isn't it? I mean, I mentioned the way he fought. Is there anyone out there in the top 15 or 20 that you think Chisora could have a relatively straightforward night's work against? There's no one that jumps out at me that thinks
there's no such thing as straightforward in Derek Chisora anymore. Any fight is going to be hell.
It'll be a shootout or a battle of attrition, one of the other.
So you can't take care of him. It's going to be, you're either all in or you're like, you know, matching him 50-50.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's tough, isn't it? It's tough, but what a brutal sport and what a brutal position to be in, because certainly for Eddie Hearn, like, there's no right move, really. The next move isn't going to be right, regardless, for a lot of people.
They're not even, if we look a couple of fights back, he was in with Usyk, who I knew was going to be a heavyweight star. That's one of the most dangerous heavyweights in the world. Yes, he won't put your lights out, but, you know, he went in with Alexander Usyk, which was a dangerous move for him. So he's accustomed to the danger. It's what kind of danger that we need to worry about.
Yeah, it's a tough one. So, Dougie, did I see on the ring chat that you were possibly on the road this weekend going to fights?
Well, no, I have a home game this weekend. Lightweight standout Ryan Garcia is fighting Javier Fortuna at the former Staples Center. I think we call it the Crypto.com Arena in Los Angeles. So I'll be covering the show, but I don't have to leave town, which is nice.
Staples Center sounded a lot better, by the way.
Didn't it?
It's always the Staples Center to me.
But Staples Center sounded weird too at the time. And I was like, what? We're going to go in there and buy office supplies? What's happening? Yeah.
You know, I think probably the lightweight division is probably the division we spend most time talking about in terms of the guys that we've covered since we've been running the podcast. So how much further forward are we going to be in terms of knowing who stands where after Saturday night with Ryan Garcia boxing?
I think the story with Saturday night is that Ryan Garcia fought in San Antonio 2 months ago and now he's back. That's the story. The story is that Ryan is really back. And San Antonio against Emmanuel Togo, it wasn't a tease. It wasn't a one-off. You know, before the Togo fight, he was talking the talk, right? He was saying, I'm back. I love boxing. I never stopped loving boxing. I had other problems outside of the ring that kept me outside of the ring last year. That put me on the sidelines after that sensational up from the canvas stoppage of Luke Campbell. He feels that he's got his training situation right. He's got the right trainer in Joe Goosen. And it was all talk, even after he won the fight with Togo. It's all talk until you get back into camp and get back with that trainer and continue learning and continue developing and then get a fight. So right now, I would say Ryan Garcia is walking the walk. He started the year off talking the talk, and the year is progressing with him walking the walk. And if he defeats Javier Fortuna, guess what? Fortuna is in Ring Magazine's lightweight top 10.
Number
he's
nine.
A solid. Yeah, he's number nine. He's a legitimate contender. to go was not. He had been like number 10 here and there, but he was more of a fringe contender. So this is a step in the right direction. It's not a big step. It's a small, in terms of his opposition, this is a small step in the right direction. And I want to see better results. I don't want to see him, labor and struggle for 12 rounds, even though Fortuna is a much better fighter and with much better experience and talent than to go. And with conceivably a more difficult style. But I do think Fortuna is not going to come to survive. He's going to try to win, which should put him in line with that, with that speed and power that Garcia possesses. So I want to see, it's not if Garcia wins on Saturday, it's how he wins. And if he sparks out Javier Fortuna, we all know who he's going to call out. He's targeted Tank Davis. And that's a huge fight. If the two sides can come to an agreement, if they can figure out how to navigate this difficult, boxing landscape of promoter platform allegiances, and they can come together and make that fight before the end of the year, it would be a huge success story for the boxing industry.
Hey, Tom, I think the Ryan Garcia one's a tough one, isn't he? Because he's a guy who I think he divides opinion, because he's obviously a social media product and brand. But he can really, really fight.
Yep.
And he, for me, he's must-see TV. Like, I want to watch him fight. I want to see what he can do. Do you agree with that school of thought? Is he one of those guys in a clutch where you think, you know, if you're not staying up for him in UK time, you're going to get up and think, geez, I want to watch this kid and see what he's done?
Absolutely. I've been a believer in him for a long time. I mean, he had all the momentum when he knocked out Luke Campbell in 7 rounds and got off the floor to do it. You can't do much more than that. We've seen Ray Vargas do it at the weekend, getting off the floor to win a fight. You know, one of your biggest fights is, I mean, that's the mark of what could turn out to be a terrific champion. But then obviously he had issues with his mental health that he wanted to address. He was out for a long time, but still a very young man. But honestly, guys, some of the attributes, like the speed and the reflexes, some of the knockouts he's produced, granted against, you know, sub-tier opposition or certainly less than elite level opposition, some of the delivery on those knockout shots has been incredible. And I think he's a match for any lightweight in the world. You know, I'm not saying that he necessarily beats them all, but they'll know they're in a fight. He just needs to get put into the position to show us what's there when he's at the pure elite level. And I can't wait to see it. I'm a big believer in Ryan Garcia. I think he's terrific.
Dougie, I know we've touched upon the business side of this before. You mentioned the boxing landscape. Is this feasible, Tank versus Ryan Garcia in 2023 pay-per-view, however we can get it, whatever we need to do? Is it feasible?
Well, it's feasible from a pure business standpoint. All the parties involved know that the fight is going to be well promoted because both fighters have dedicated fan bases. And the great thing is they hit different markets. They have big fan bases who fill arenas or follow them on social media and talk about them all the time, regardless of who they fight, but they hit different demographics. And back in the day, those were the best, those were the most successful pay-per-views, is when you had a West Coast sensation like Oscar De La Hoya, who was a crossover darling, against like a hardcore fan favorite from the East Coast, like a Pernell Whitaker or a Bernard Hopkins. Those fights did really well on pay-per-view because both fighters tapped in to different markets and different fan bases, and they all came together. And I see that happening with Ryan Garcia, West Coast product, and Tank Davis, who's out of Baltimore. So all the parties involved, I think they know that, okay, we're going to get our investment back on this. Like, and the fighters themselves are going to go out there and promote the fight, even if they're not actively promoting. Just the fact that they're in this fight, it's going to promote itself. It's just figuring out the platform, the promotional and platform situation. It's not feasible in terms of Tank Davis is with Floyd Mayweather Promotions and Ryan is with Golden Boy Promotions. Although even that is a storyline. I mean, Oscar De La Hoya and Floyd Mayweather are the damn promoters. Imagine them being at the press conference. I mean, it sells itself. So do you fight on some sort of neutral pay-per-view platform? Maybe that's feasible. Maybe that's possible. Or does Ryan just say, hey, I'm gonna leave the DAZN platform for this one fight, this one huge opportunity. I'm gonna fight on Showtime pay-per-view. And after I win, I'm gonna come back to DAZN and I'm gonna be a megastar and it's gonna be worth it for everybody. And Golden Boy will have a new Canelo Alvarez, I'll have a new Golden Goose. I think that's possible. And I'll say this, there might be some wording in Ryan Garcia's contract that allows for that. You know, Ryan Garcia's contract has been reworked more than once, right? he has had his issues with Golden Boy. And they have had their come to Jesus arbitration and their come to Jesus meetings with all the lawyers and they've worked it out to where he's back boxing for Golden Boy and fighting on DAZN. But I think there were some provisions and some clauses that were worked out that were stuck into the contract that weren't there before, that may allow for him to go and fight on another platform, given a high enough profile opponent.
Tom, I've got to say, I think Garcia versus Tank might be number two for me behind Spence Crawford in terms of fights I'd like. Is it, without a shadow of a doubt, a top five fight for you at the minute in terms of what could be made and should be made?
Absolutely. And I think that we predominantly want to see Crawford Spence because it's the ultimate decider. And after all this time, we find out who's the best between the two. But if I was to put my money in what the better fight's going to be, I think it would be Tank against Garcia by distance. I think the other guys, would essentially, you know, there'd be a lot of, not posturing, but these guys are on a skill level where they're going to have to figure things out over periods of rounds, and there'll be a lot of non-action.
They're also mature seasoned fighters.
You know, mid-30s. These are young kids in the prime of life, and I think that the fireworks in that fight would be off the hook. I really do. I think it's, yeah, definitely top five, conceivably top three.
Yeah, I don't want to put a downer on Spence Crawford, and I'm not going to do that. But I can see what you're saying there in terms of the negativity, in terms of these guys now have so much to lose because, you know, where does the loser go from here? Not saying there's not a million and one options for them, but obviously in terms of reputation, they're both right up here. But whoever wins, unless there's going to be a rematch, it's a tough one. I can see them being quite negative and just trying to, you know, not trying to lose rather than trying to win.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think that look how long we must have looked forward to De La Hoya Trinidad for 3 or 4 years, I think, before it transpired. And then when we got there, it was nothing to write home about. Now, Trinidad would argue that was Oscar's fault, but, you know, that's besides the point. We can wait loads of Mayweather-Pacquiao was another fight. Damp Squibb, I was in Vegas for that. And honestly, I've never seen Vegas hit such a downer in my life is bad. Like, and I've been in Vegas a few times, perhaps not as much as you guys, but honestly, you can wait for like a lifetime for these fights, and then they come around. And no, I mean, I would love to see these guys go at it just now, Tank and Garcia, because they're in their early 20s, because of it smacks of that kind of Leonard Hearns vibe. Not the fighters, right? But taking them at this point of their careers and putting them in, you know, into a battlefield and let's see what happens. I think it's really, really exciting.
So I know what you did there, Tom, because I do that sometimes. You've always got to say like, oh yeah, I'm not comparing them to Hearns, Leonard, Hagler, directly. But you know, there's nothing wrong with doing that. But the only way that they're realistically going to get that comparison is if they all start fighting each other.
Absolutely.
Regularly.
Yeah.
Because that's what elevated those guys to where they're
the reason I'm watching my words though is because when Leonard went in against Hearns the first time, he was already a great fighter. Some were saying an all-time great at that point. Hearns, even because he'd bashed out Cuevas in double quick time, who'd had 11 consecutive title defenses, when you get those kind of results and bring those guys together, it felt like a battle of all-time greats. And sure, I can't put either one of those guys in that category.
No, sure. No, but I mean, certainly as soon as they start fighting one another,
if that actually happens,
then I think they'll only serve to bring each other up. What they say, a rising tide lifts all boats, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Agreed.
So, Dougie, last week you sort of teased about what might be going in the magazine. Can you give that away this week?
Yeah. No, Dougie's already given it away.
I know. Yeah, I can't believe it's Oscar De La Hoya, greatest hits. Hey, look, my shirt matches this cover.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, special issue. It's a tribute issue. It's an issue that commemorates Oscar De La Hoya's the 30th anniversary of De La Hoya winning the Olympic gold medal in Barcelona, 1992, 30 years ago, guys. Can you believe it? And really, by September, it'll be the 20th anniversary of De La Hoya versus Fernando Vargas, Bad Blood, one of the funnest fight promotions I ever covered. And so, I can't believe that was 20 years ago.
There it is.
Did you get to the bottom of what actually happened out in Big Bear? Was it Oscar ran past Vargas when he'd slipped over and he laughed at him and
Oscar, I proofed the magazine. Oscar can't remember it. Vargas insists that it definitely happened, but they're all good now.
Vargas just didn't like him. It was bad blood. He was looking up to him and saying, "Hey, you're not like me. You're not like my homies. You're one of those guys. You're different. You're East LA. I'm Oxnard. You were an Olympian. I was an Olympian, but you were a gold medalist and everybody's watching you and you're a big superstar and I want what you have." And it was natural. It was a good jealousy. It was a good hate. It was, I mean, that was a legitimate grudge fight.
And it's bad blood to bromance.
And it reminds me, I mean, you know, Tom just mentioned the Felix Trinidad fight, and that was a letdown. But it was still, I mean, even though Oscar came in, you know, wound up with the shit end of that stick, you know, that majority decision, to me, it's a feather in his hat that in his 20s, before the end of the 90s, he faced Felix Trinidad, because those were the two top welterweights. They were both like top five pound for pound. And, you know, both undefeated, both at the peak of their physical prowess. And it means something when the superstar of the sport fights a guy like Felix Trinidad or the unbeaten Ike Corte or the undefeated Shane Mosley or the undefeated Fernando Vargas. Vargas got busted by Felix Trinidad. But the thing about the Vargas fight is it's a huge promotion. Both guys brought their fan bases to that event, and it delivered. Like, you know, so yeah, I can forgive Oscar for, you know, I was mad at the time. I thought he would actually take Trinidad into deep waters and stop him. That didn't happen, right? And it was a lackluster, you know, type fight. But, you know, for every Trinidad fight, there's the first fight with Mosley. There's the fight with Ike Corte, which was dramatic. And obviously there was Bad Blood, which was action-packed and dramatic, you know, and when you have a superstar that's willing to do that and put on those kind of fights, boxing is healthy.
Yeah.
Hey, so you guys are ready for the pelters, right? Because like they're going to say, "Oh, Oscar's got his own." He's made all of that himself. It's his own special issue. You know, it's a vanity project.
I welcome that. Yeah, I'm going to counterpunch. It's easy to counterpunch because you just talk about what he did.
Yeah.
Like, hey, in 1995, here's what he did.
Yeah.
Who's doing that today? Just keep tossing it back at him. Use it as an opportunity to celebrate this guy's career. Yeah. I mean,
I'm not losing the head over it. I'm going to keep it. You know, I'll maybe put a couple depending on how bad the abuse is. But the bottom line is that, you know, the icons of the sport, you know, we did the Four Kings. We have, you know, Mike Tyson, Manny Pacquiao.
We did Trinidad. We've already done.
Eventually, you know, the bottom line is, regardless, the guy was a great fighter. He was iconic. He was a massive pay-per-view star. He followed the Sugar Ray Leonard playbook in terms of what Doug just alluded to, going after the best in the business constantly. It was mega fight after mega fight after mega fight. We could only wish that we had that today. The guy was a great fighter, point blank, and he deserves his time in the sun.
Okay, good stuff. Hey, I'm glad I struck a nerve there. But hey, people are going to want to know, right? People, you know, you're going to get the stuff. Like, this is what happens, right? You know, when you're in the business, this is what you get.
Yeah.
So good stuff. By the way, is there an Oscar exclusive in there, or is it archive stuff? Or what
have you
got in there?
We've got them in there. It's all new. We've got them in there a few times, and it's all new. Yeah, we do. I mean, with someone, I think archive is useful on special issues if it was way back. But I think you can use up to date stuff when it's a fighter that's been within the last 20, 30 years.
Nice. Right, guys, we're going to hit some rants, although sort of Dougie beat us to the punch with a rant on that one. But
warning, guys, we're running out of serious time here.
Yeah, we're less than a minute.
Okay, well,
look,
we're going to cut it then. We'll cut it out.
Next time.
Yeah, hey, we'll use Dougie's rant as his actual rant. Dougie Fisher wins. Nice That's one, guys. Look, it's been great to see you again, and we will be back next week. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. All the best.